choke points. We're going to find out later this morning just how much the state wants to raise the tolls on the 99 tunnel, the 520 bridge, the Tacoma Narrows bridge. And Chris is here to list the happy options.
Yeah, and the reason we're doing this, the state says it needs to raise these toll rates to make up for the loss of revenue during the pandemic. In some cases, the corridors might not be able to meet their financial obligations if the Washington State Transportation Commission doesn't act to raise the rates. So the two options for the 99 tunnel, the first would be an across-the-board 15% increase, which would raise the rates between 15 and 35 cents, depending on the time of day you hit the tunnel. The second option would be a straight 25-cent increase for all hours. Toll analyst Brent Baker says this won't be the last time we see increases either.
Both options would shore up net revenues through 2025 fiscal year, after which additional increases will likely be needed.
The toll increase would go into effect in October. By the way, there's also a standard 3% increase planned for next July, so that tunnel is going to get a little bit more expensive for certain. The 520 bridge also has two options being considered. The first would extend the peak hour toll rate another hour in the morning and the afternoon, so you'd be at that max for another 60 minutes each morning and afternoon. All other hours, with the exception of overnight, which would stay the same under option one, would see an increase of 20 to 55 cents. Option two, an across-the-board 15% increase for all hours. Now, thanks to $50 million in federal recovery dollars the legislature is throwing at this corridor, these potential toll increases wouldn't take effect until 2023. But Baker says the commission needs to act now.
It is incumbent upon the commission to take action this year so that we can accurately demonstrate that the SR 520 net toll revenues will be sufficient to meet all of the forecast horizon financial obligations through the life of the debt, as is required by the master bond resolution.
The Tacoma Narrows Bridge plan, only one option, a straight 25-cent increase. Randy Boss is on the Narrows Citizens Advisory Board. Not a big fan.
You recommend yet another toll increase against the users of the TMB. Just another outrageous inequity that keeps getting piled on the TMB with no comprehensive evaluation.
If approved, the Narrows Bridge increase would also start in October. So here's what's happening today. The commission will decide on which options it wants to go with. The public will then have about a month to weigh in. The final decisions on the toll increases will be made in August.
And the Fairview Bridge project at South Lake Union?
It's going to open on Sunday. They are finally opening after 20 months of construction. The Fairview Bridge will open to cars on Sunday. Brand new bridge. This was the last wood pile supported road or bridge in the city, so it was definitely time for an upgrade, but it finally opens. A little bit of delay because of the pandemic, but we'll be driving on that thing again on Sunday.
All right, very good. Bridging, of course, headquartered in Kent, Washington. And as someone who watched it live when Alan Shepard went into space in 1962. You guys have watched that launch, right?
Well, no.
Maybe not live, but...
I've seen it, Dave.
Okay, you've seen it. Yeah, okay, good. It was so difficult. It was so elaborate. Everything that had to be done to pull that flight off, right? For one thing, Shepard's in the space suit, right? They put him in isolation. They have to take him in the elevator up to the capsule. Mm-hmm. The rocket, compared to this one, was huge. And, of course, that booster just tumbled back into the ocean. They weren't going to reuse that. That was a throwaway. And the capsule had to land in the ocean, and there had to be a naval vessel set out to pick it up. And by contrast, this thing, first of all, you notice this is the first time I've really watched one of these launches stem to stern closely. The flame was like the gas flame on your range. There was no huge plumes of smoke like you had from those earlier NASA launches. And, of course, the landing was right there in the West Texas desert on Bezos's ranch. And the velocity, at least on the readout that I saw, was 16 miles an hour. So that was quite a bump. But nobody seemed to be the worse for wear. You didn't need the entire U.S. Navy to recover the thing. And so even though there's no really new science here necessarily. I mean, we knew you could do suborbital flight. We've known that for years. This is a way to do it and actually make it affordable, at least to a certain clientele. So I'm curious to find out whether you guys think this is now going to be basically a regular thing.
Oh, I think it will be. And I think people are waiting for that. Remember when the first cell phones came out and you had to, like, take out a loan to get one and they were huge and cumbersome?
Yeah, they were the size of a suitcase.
I think people are waiting to see if this is what's going to happen with spaceflight. Suddenly, it will be attainable. It's something that you or I might be able to do. I don't have all the money, but there's the hope that at some point, this will be more of an everyday occurrence. So in that way, I think this is revolutionary, even if it's the technology we've kind of seen before.
I'm going to wait until they do a couple more successful flights, just because something about sitting on top of a liquid hydrogen rocket like that, just not quite 100% sold on that.
Really? No pilot? You're not.
I'm not 100% sold. But yeah, I think this will, for, as you said, Dave, the people who have the money will be lining up to do this, because this is something you can check off the bucket list. I mean, everybody wants to experience weightlessness, and it's more fun to actually go into subspace than it is to fly a bunch of, parabolas, whatever, on an airplane to make that happen. But yeah, it's impressive. And again, I think the landing of that, of the booster rocket, the reusable nature of that is a game changer.
And that's just science fiction
amazing.
There. Wow.
What I'm not sure is where it leads to, though, beyond space tourism. Does this mean, I know that Bezos has this dream of interplanetary settlement. I don't see that happening unless there's a much better technology than rocket fuel.
But the idea,
that's a long trip.
It is. But, this is sort of the launching of that idea. You make this possible. You get businesses in there competing. You get not only just private companies, but Bezos competing with other billionaires to see who can come up with this faster and better. And I think that, at least in our history of capitalism in the U.S., generates new ideas. So I think it will happen eventually. How soon? I don't know, but I think we'll get there.
And by the way, go ahead.
I was just say very, very quickly, while everybody else is successful with these flights right now, Boeing Space Taxi is planning another unmanned flight next week. So that kind of tells you how far kind of that has fallen down the list in terms of being able to put things in the air.
Yeah. We have to also eliminate this rumor that you've heard that in space nobody can hear you scream. You're able to hear people scream in space. Canada has announced it will begin allowing fully vaccinated U.S. citizens into their country on August 9th. Those from elsewhere can enter Canada beginning September 7th. Let's go live to CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg. This took a long time. What is it with Canada? I mean, do you agree with these restrictions? And do you think that they would shut it down again if things get worse?
Well, we sort of morphed the metrics here. It used to be a focus on the vaccination level of the destination. Now it's on the vaccination level of the people who want to go to the destination. That's why you saw the European Union open up to all vaccinated Americans. That's 27 countries. That's happening now. The other reason why they did it, of course, is they didn't want to go through another summer of no revenue from the largest industry in the world, travel and tourism. Canada got a late start. They were definitely late to the gate in terms of vaccinating their own people. Those numbers still aren't where they should be. But the economic impact here is sufficient to drive them to finally make a decision, because they were kicking the can down the road for the last 7 months. Every month around the 18th of the month, they announced they were pushing it back another month. And finally, August 9th is the date. Now, keep in mind, their ports are not open, and they're not scheduled to reopen now until November. They originally were going to close them through February of next year. So there is some progress being made. So bottom line for people traveling there, if you're a fully vaccinated American and you can show proof of that vaccination as of August 9th, you can go to Canada.
Okay, but they're still not accepting cruise ships then?
No, they're not. And by the way, by closing your ports till November 1st, that rules out Alaska anyway for this year. So what's happening with the Alaska cruises, as you know, is they're sailing from Seattle or sailing from San Diego nonstop to Alaska, not having to stop in Canada at all.
Yeah. Now, the cruise industry is back here in Seattle. We have, the Majestic Princess is in port this morning, 3,500 people. So we're seeing the cruise ships come back here. What is the market like? Are people trusting the idea of confining themselves to a boat with 3,000 strangers?
Well, keep in mind that with the exception of the state of Florida, people who are not getting on cruise ships who are not fully vaccinated. The crews are fully vaccinated. The officers are. So you're having 100% vaccination compliance, and that's what's allowing them with certain amount of confidence to cruise. And one other thing, it's the numbers. You know, if you go back to 2019, only 30 million Americans took a cruise, and of those 30 million, an overwhelming majority of them were repeat cruisers. They're loyal cruisers. They love their individual ships. They almost have entitlement issues about the ones they want to cruise on. So they've come back with a vengeance. And in fact, even the cruises that are on sale right now for 2022 are selling out.
Well, that's good, because I haven't taken a lot of cruises, but the ones I've taken have been absolutely delightful. So the industry, in other words, the industry is not going to simply dry up and blow away. It's back.
Not at all. They're actually rebounding very nicely. They still have those issues in Florida, which are now still in the courts. As you know, the 11th Circuit just overturned a Florida rule that was trying to, you know, stop the CDC rule, letting the cruise lines make their own rules about vaccination. So that's still going to be litigated. Hasn't been resolved yet, because now, of course, the state of Florida is going to appeal. So with the exceptions of the state of Florida and Texas, cruising is coming back.
And as a seasoned traveler yourself, you would trust going on a cruise ship?
I'll be on one in 3 days from now.
Good for you. Also, as a seasoned traveler also, what do you think about going into space for 11 minutes?
Well, I have a very strong view about this. You're not going into space. It's suborbital. This is a little bit of a stunt. I understand it. I appreciate it. I respect it. But let's not call it space. Let's go back to 1958. The Russian monkey in Sputnik did what they just did today.
Yes.
I'm not kidding.
No, and so did Alan Shepard.
And the monkey didn't have to spend $250,000 to do it. So, you know, if you don't get the cost down, you're not really democratizing space. And it's a good first step, but let's not kid ourselves. Nobody went to space today. They went to the edge of it.
The edge of space. But they were weightless. Of course, you can do that without going into space as well. But I'm curious about what you think of the market for this. I don't think I know any billionaires, unless there's somebody at the station whose wealth I'm not familiar with. I don't think I know any billionaires. So, I mean,
well, you don't
what's
have
the
to be
psychology
a
here?
To book passage. Well, you know what? Like the Virgin Galactic, it's $250,000 to do it. There are a lot of people out there, believe it or not, who have that kind of money sitting around who want to do it, and they're doing it. They're selling out. They've already sold, I think, 6,000 or 7,000 spaces on, you know, future flights. So let's keep that in mind.
So there will be, you think there will be a healthy market for this, even if it's basically just a stunt?
Yeah, there is. I mean, look, I remember, I'm not dating myself, but I remember when I was watching TV on a black and white set with my parents, and they came out with the first color TV set, no one could afford it. And now, of course, you know, color TVs are about the cost of two cheeseburgers. So it's getting better.
they're practically disposable, aren't they? One more thing on the terrestrial travel. There's a new travel advisory for the UK. What's the status there?
That's a big problem. You know, July 19th, yesterday, was supposed to be Freedom Day in the United Kingdom. They were supposed to announce that they were going to allow fully vaccinated Americans to come without quarantining. That did not happen. They're trying to relax the restrictions for many other countries, but the hang-up is reciprocity. The United States is not willing to let European vaccinated travelers come here yet because there's a hang-up on what vaccines we're going to accept. Mm-hmm. Right now, the U.S. is not willing to accept AstraZeneca or the Sino vaccine from China, and until that issue is resolved, we're not letting them in. They're letting us in the European Union countries, because, once again, they don't want to go through another summer of no revenue from travel and tourism. And realistically, if you're fully vaccinated and you play by the rules, you can go with confidence.
CBS travel editor Peter Greenberg. Peter, thanks very much.
You got it.
Strangers confide in Al Nixon, sharing their deepest secrets while he listens intently on a park bench. He's become one community's guiding force, and now they're finding a way to thank him. CBS's Steve Hartman has your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft.
In St. Petersburg, Florida, when the sun rises, Al Nixon sets for his impromptu therapy sessions.
How have you been?
Are you surprised at what people tell you?
Not anymore.
Al isn't a trained therapist.
I've been concerned.
He actually works for the city water department.
He's dismissing me.
But in these early morning hours, he's a trusted confidant and counselor to whoever passes by.
And I wrote to him and I said...
Renee Rutstein is a regular.
He knows everything about me.
Did you feel weird sharing all your secrets to a guy on a bench?
No, because he'll never judge me and he always shoots me straight.
He's not judgmental and he takes you for who you are.
Bernadette Dorsett Mills says she has never met a wiser man.
He's like the guiding force.
At the same time, I don't hear you talking a lot.
No.
I just see a lot of nodding, like you're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of mm-hmms.
Listening is the number one skill all mankind needs to know how to do very well.
Mm-hmm.
A skill he has clearly mastered.
Mm-hmm.
When Al started coming here 7 years ago, the therapy was for him. He needed a quiet place to clear his head, and the last thing he wanted was to hear other people's problems. But then a woman he'd never met told him something he'll never forget.
She said, "Every day I see you, I know everything is going to be okay." And that made me realize that when you speak to someone or you smile, you let them know I value you, and people pick that up.
When I walk by, sometimes, you know, I don't even get a chance to chat with him because there are other people waiting in line.
In appreciation for always being there, not long ago, Al's faithful put a plaque on his bench. To a loving and loyal friend and a confidant to many, forever and always.
I teared up. That was powerful.
How can such a simple plaque be that powerful?
When you express to someone, you matter to me.
They gave you back what you gave them.
Everyone needs an Al.
Good morning, sweetie.
Even Al.
Have a great day.
You too.
Steve Hartman, On the Road, in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Listening is key. Very wise words there, Dave.
That's pretty much the best legacy you can have. And 7:48, here he is from the G and Ursula Show, which you can hear weekdays 9 to noon here on Cairo Radio. G. Scott.
Good morning. Good morning.
What'd you think about Jeff Bezos' little up and down space flight this morning?
Well, you know, usually your boy's excited about this kind of stuff, and I thought that it was going to happen again, and I wasn't as excited as I was a couple weeks ago with Branson and his people going up, but... then I turned it around and said, wait a minute. I am excited because it's got local ties. We're talking about Ken That's Washington. Right. We're talking about Blue Origin. My homeboy Albert works for Blue Origin. So, yeah, shout out to Blue Origin and what they're doing. So my excitement isn't because I know everybody's talking about the billionaires, right? That's cool.
Yes.
You want to talk about the billionaires doing their thing. I want to talk about the people that all make it happen, the people that they won't be talking about, the people at Blue Origin, the people that's doing those things. So I'm excited. I did think about Austin Powers' rocket scene. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go look it up yourself. Austin Powers' rocket scene. That's what the visual that I had on this this morning.
I thought it was... I don't know. I mentioned, it was sort of like NASA meets Evel Knievel. It looked really easy compared to the way it originally was back in 1962. And you look at the thing and say, could that really go into space? But it did. And it went into space carrying ordinary people who didn't have to go through 6 months of astronaut training. Mm-hmm. So apparently the forces were something that ordinarily physically endowed people could stand. And that was the impressive part to me, that it looks like the kind of thing that actually could become routine.
That is true. And I think that the routine part that you mentioned, I even felt like, even watching this morning's, that I was like, oh, okay, this is fine. Because 2 weeks ago, I was a little on edge. I was a little nervous. Hadn't seen it before. And because we had seen it before, now as I was looking at this one, I'm like, okay, I wasn't as worried. I thought it was going to be fine. They'll go up, come down, and be great. But yeah, it's pretty cool, especially knowing that, especially the 82-year-old lady who years ago was denied the opportunity to do it because she was a woman and that she got that opportunity. I was really excited about that. And then how about the young man on there? How are they popping champagne?
Yeah.
And my man ain't even 21.
There's no law about champagne in space.
I mean, talk about being that young. I mean, what's going to be his second act?
I don't know. Well, probably Mars. I mean, he's young enough, right? Mars, Jupiter. Let's talk about the Olympics. Are these things going to happen? It seems like every day there's somebody new who's come down with COVID.
Yeah, you know, I was, let me set the record straight. I love these Summer Olympics every year. I've been so excited. Probably like somebody listening right now, you probably are excited about the Olympics every year too. But you know what I miss? And you know what we haven't been getting? Every story that we're getting now is about either, you know, somebody tested positive for some marijuana, somebody's not going because of health and safety protocols, somebody's not going because they have COVID. There's all of the negativity that is leading up to this, as opposed to back in the day. Remember the feel-good stories we would get? Remember the stories about this person and that
up
person?
Up close and personal.
Oh, and you could not wait. Yeah. And then, let's just say the games do go on, and let's say they are in Tokyo, and there's an amazing story. Who's the camera going to pan to? Who are you going to pan to in a crowd? So, this is their father. This is their mom. And they're from here. And there's this story. And look at them cheering them on. It's just going to be weird, man. And so that's something. And then you got Toyota. Toyota was a $3 billion sponsor. And then they said, you know what? Nah, we good. We're pulling all of our ads for the Olympics. Wait, what?
Wow.
So there's just so much, if you will, just something that's to us. So if and when it does happen on Friday, will I be watching? Yeah, don't let me be a hypocrite. I told you, I love the Summer Olympics. I love the Summer Games. I just don't know how this is going to go off with all of this stuff leading up to it. How about you, Dave?
Well, I'll watch it because my wife is a huge fan of gymnastics. She loves it. And we even watch that stuff when we watch the preliminaries and all that stuff too. So we watch it for entertainment. I just wonder about the athletes when, if some of the best athletes are not there for one reason or the other, then doesn't it leave you wondering what you've achieved?
Yeah, but I'm sure some of those, I mean, for us, yes, we're probably thinking that, but I think for those athletes, I don't think they're worried about that. I don't think they care who's there, who's not. If they have that opportunity, I think that's what they care about. And so the last thing going forward is this. This is just this year's. In another 4 years, well, I don't know if they're going to shorten it up and go 3 years to kind of get it back on the schedule again. Yeah. But anyways, when it, I mean, is this it? Will the Olympics ever be the same as they used to be? Because I'm kind of scared that it probably won't be. It's kind of depressing a little bit. Like, do little kids get excited about this? Like, we used to get excited about this. Yeah. The only thing I see now are a couple NBC commercials that kind of get you excited. Yesterday was 25 years ago that Muhammad Ali was running through Atlanta with the torch. You guys remember that? Wow. Do you remember how cool that was? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm just nerding out here for a little bit, but I loved it.
G. Scott with Ursula at 9 o'clock on Cairo. Thanks, G. Seattle's Morning News, and Tuesdays we go to our nation's capital and Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David Farenthold at the Washington Post. David, good morning. And I saw the president walking back his comments that Facebook is killing people. I think I knew what he was meaning to say, but I guess what the staff said, you went a little bit too far, Mr. President.
I was surprised too. I thought that was something that Biden had said that made a point that was, he made it very strongly. And I thought most people understood that his meaning, not that Facebook was killing people, but that Facebook was allowing misinformation about vaccines to spread, which was leading people to not get vaccinated and then die of COVID. So I was a little surprised he walked it back, but I think the meaning is still there. That was what he meant all along.
Well, I guess it shows that both he and Donald Trump can be mad at Facebook in irrational ways. I don't know. Let me ask you this, though. Do you think that if, let's just say they banned all these rumors from Facebook, that's going to change people's minds? I mean, people use Facebook as ammunition for their family arguments. But I mean, people who are against vaccines are against vaccines because they're against vaccines, not because of Facebook says.
To me, it seems like it would make it harder to spread the misinformation. I mean, Facebook is just such a great, what makes it a successful company, is it makes it so easy to spread one fact, one message to millions of people. And if they, you know, Facebook already has rules about pornography, they have rules about weapons, they have, you know, violence. There are things they don't let you, you know, that are, they're very good at finding and eliminating. And so, you know, why not add vaccine misinformation to it? It would take a little more work, but I think, you know, there'd be a huge public health payoff.
On the January 6th investigation, which continues to send people to jail, one of the people who attacked the Pentagon was sentenced yesterday. Here's what his lawyer said.
Paul Hodgkins loves this country. He's not my enemy. He's just a man who screwed up.
And we're hearing that from a number of these suspects that, you know, I temporarily lost my head. They seem to be really apologetic. And I'm wondering if that's what this turns out to be, a bunch of people who just, you know, temporary insanity, otherwise good people who are just moved by the passion of the moment. Will that defuse this whole thing?
I don't know. It's been interesting to see the contrast between the punishment that there's been given to people who voted illegally. You know, there's this case in Texas where a black woman voted when she was on probation. She wasn't allowed to, and they gave her 5 years. And so these people who attacked the Capitol in the hopes that they would overthrow an actual election, you know, not just cast a vote, but change the outcome of the election. It's interesting they're getting such light sentences so far. It may be that the Justice Department has decided that, you know, there are hundreds of these people and they want to focus on the people they think actually like organized it, you know, led it, made it worse than it could have been. And so it's possible that people like the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, the organizers of groups like that, will get tougher sentences. But yeah. I have been a little surprised at how light the sentences are, given sort of the intention of these people, at least on that day.
I didn't hear about the woman in Texas getting five. What did she do? Pull a gun on a poll worker? How'd she get five?
She just voted. She wasn't allowed to vote because I think she was still on probation or something. Uh-huh. She voted. And then that, you know, there have been cases to Harris County, where I'm from in Texas. The attorney generals of Texas is also going after a guy who waited like 6 hours to vote last year. And it turned out that he had like 2 months left on his parole and he wasn't allowed to vote yet. And, you know, there's huge, you know, there's such a demand to, like, you know, find somebody for voting illegally that there's been these huge punishments handed down.
Wow.
It's a real contrast to what's happening in
well, at least they found cases. Two bona fide cases of vote fraud then, right?
I mean, how many more do we need for it to matter? You know,
a lot more. Well, Maricopa County, this I thought was kind of embarrassing for the cyber ninjas. The Maricopa County released some of the actual statistics that the cyber ninjas were using and pointed out that they basically made arithmetic errors. They were taking incomplete data and using it to argue that more people voted than ballots were issued, when in fact there were 450,000 more ballots issued than were actually cast. I mean, how much longer does that go on, do you think?
It seems like it's going on a long time. So I sit next to the person who's really covering that for the Post, and it sounds like the thing that the cyber ninjas did there, where they were like, we're going to hand count all these ballots and do it in originally said they could do it in 11 days. Everyone said, no, it's impossible. And the cyber ninjas said, no, well, you just, you know, you weren't trying hard enough. We're going to do it right. And it's now dragged on weeks and weeks and weeks. I mean, I think the probable outcome of this is that the cyber ninjas make some report, which perhaps relies on, you know, what other people think is a misreading of the data that says there were problems, and that, you know, the people who are already convinced will remain convinced. I think that they have lost their chance to appeal to a broader audience, both by taking so long and by it's become such a farce, you know, that they, you know, they, if they had hoped that they could make a case to the country that there had been an election stolen or some sort of real shenanigans, I think their moment for that seems to have been lost.
They just don't, I mean, they just took they took the statistics and didn't understand what they were. Anyway, it just seems really bad for them. So does this, if it turns out to be as embarrassing as it's been so far, do you think that puts the kibosh on this kind of thing happening again?
I think it might. I mean, already you've seen, there's been a lot of talk among Republicans in Michigan and Pennsylvania about, you know, among some Republicans in the state government about doing this. And there's even a state Senate committee chairman in Pennsylvania who sent letters out to a few counties saying, like, oh, give me all your ballots and voting machines. But that, to me, looks more like it's sort of like a pantomime of an effort rather than an actual effort. I think people have looked at Arizona and seen the, like, chaos and delays and the way it's descended into this mess and thought, well, you know, we don't want to do that. We're trying to win elections in 2022, not contest 2020.
Now, as a Texas boy yourself, I know you're following closely the exodus of the Texas Democrats, or the Hegira, or whatever you want to call it. But anyway, they're still AWOL, right?
That's right.
And just forever? I mean, how long can they hold out? Where are they getting the money to pay for their hotel bills?
Well, that is really interesting. I've seen some people trying to figure that out, and I don't know the answer. One thing that they may be counting on is that the governor, in sort of a fit of pique after the last time the Democrats killed this voter bill, vetoed the legislative budget. Like he vetoed the bill that basically funds the legislature. Mm-hmm. And so I think the money runs out in like a month or something. So there is a clock that's ticking. It's not, 2022. I think there is a period of some weeks in which if they stay gone, it becomes easier to come back and not have to do anything. I think that they have done a good job exposing what's going on in Texas. You know, whether they'll ever be able to stop, for all time, will they be able to stop the Republicans from doing what the Republicans want to do in Texas, where Republicans have all this control? Mm-hmm. I kind of doubt it.
Well, but what is going on in Texas? I know I've asked you this a number of times, but I mean, they took back the part where the legislature could just outright throw out the vote, correct?
Yes, they so reduced some of happen. The. Yeah, they took away some of the most onerous provisions. I think it is still a bill that, I think makes it harder to vote without an ID. It reduces some hours of drive-through voting and 24-hour voting. The thing about that is, in terms of the actual practical effects, the reason that there was so much drive-through voting, so much absentee voting in 2020 was the pandemic, which hopefully will not be with us in the same way in 2022 or 2024. So it may not have that much of an effect after all, but I think the Democrats have said, why should we help anybody take measures that we think are designed to reduce our votes?
David Farenthold, live from the Washington Post. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you'll never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.